afternoon. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. That's what we call the stretch in the business, when you gotta, you know, pull it out a little bit. Right, Nicholson? There's an inside joke
that's
for
right.
you.
That's right, Scotty. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we will talk about Stephen Harper's farewell address. Just kidding. It was a bait and switch because Harper didn't use the occasion of last weekend's convention to quit. But there were still a lot of developments to go over, and we'll talk about those. Then, federal assisted dying legislation is on its way to the Senate and will likely not pass in time for the Supreme Court's deadline on Monday to have a framework in place. And that's to say nothing of the fact that basically no one likes what the Liberals have been cooking on this, and we will update you with all the details. And then finally, Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne formally apologized to Ontario's First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people this week. But is another apology what those groups need? Because there are still a lot of big problems in places like Attawapiskat, Keshechewan, and the Grassy Narrows. But first, more convention talk. There was another political convention last weekend, and we thought it would be the less interesting one because it looked like the Liberal victory lap. But there's actually some fairly big news coming out of the Liberal convention in Winnipeg as the Grits changed their membership rules and endorsed guaranteed income.
Yeah, that, it was pretty huge. Their constitutional makeover, which initially, as it was going on, sounded like there was a lot of lobbying had to happen, but it passed quite resoundingly. It was something like, was it 1988 to 1966? So that's a very, I don't know the percentages, it's a high percentage. And they've taken, it sounded like it was some 17 or 18 different documents, provincial, territorial, sort of amalgamated in this one, we're all Liberals now document.
Yeah.
And with that too is a new sense of membership, which it's more of a, you belong to a, you know, no open membership, I guess you call it, but there's no more annual fee.
Yeah.
Kind of like your license or whatever. It's just, you're just going to be part of a movement as opposed to a party, which is, in my book, movements aren't really turnkey operations. You know, you don't switch from being a party, a well-entrenched party from the beginning of, essentially the beginning of the country, to being a movement. It just doesn't work that way. Now, I know something similar happened with the Unifor, the union. It's the same kind of thing where you can become an affiliate or a supporter, even though you're not a union member. And the whole idea of it, I guess, is to broaden the base, where it's sort of like, yeah, I'm down with the Liberals. I could do that, but I don't really want to join the party, because party membership is something that's not, it's something like 9 or 10% of people in Canada, which is fairly high, because I know in the UK it's something like 1%. The population's double here, pretty much. 1% of people belong to parties, either established or non. So it's an interesting approach. Will it work for them? Remains to be seen.
Yeah.
The door is open, I guess.
It's the interesting thing was there was a lot of grumbling about how this might be a way for Trudeau to consolidate power. Because, you know, this is presumably going to appeal to a lot of people who support him. The whole idea of making it open and making it, a bit, less about the party mechanism. Because, you know, when you're running for leadership or you're running for the candidacy, even at a local level, it's about signing up new people. It's about collecting that money, collecting the dues. And now it's not about that. So there could be a particular draw to, charismatic leaders, people with big platforms coming in and can sort of rope-a-dope the mob, so to speak. And I can understand that. But on the other hand, it was fairly well a landslide in terms of it being passed. Mm-hmm. I think only 66 people voted against it out of 2,000. So it's, and I guess maybe there was a lot of hard lobbying going around to make this kind of more of a, a sunny ways looking vote that, that there's not, that, the Liberals are moving forward in this one voice kind of ideal. And I think that's perhaps where this is, where there was more criticism as well, that, you know, you're, even amongst political parties, there is internal strife. Yeah, you come together for the good of the party in the end, but sometimes you have to work stuff out in, like, the messiest possible way. And I think a lot of people were feeling pressured to be sunny ways or else, and that's kind of defeats the purpose, but there you go.
Yeah, and I mean, you're talking about a strong charismatic leader. They pretty much have that now in Trudeau. Yeah, I think. Right, so, but it's not as if he was strong-armed his way to the top. He just he did his thing, right place at the right time, maybe. I don't know. Of course he was, because he's now prime minister. But yeah, I think some of the contention was the part of the constitutional changes was talking about how the leadership and the national board will, it sounded like they're consolidating all kinds of powers, like devising bylaws, registering like policy development and overseeing riding associations. I mean, that's a fairly wide reach. And it is the kind of stuff that they do already. I mean, they, you know, find star candidates and run certain people in certain places.
Right.
But it sounds like that in some ways is going to exclusively come from the top as opposed to the grassroots, let's say. So the whole idea of opening up this membership was to, I think, to appeal to the grassroots, because those are the kinds of things you can be involved with, policy development and voting for the leader, and of course going to the convention, but which is high on everybody's mind. Just over 2,000. I'm surprised with the conventions that they were both on the same weekend. We're going to talk about the Conservatives in a bit, but was that a coincidence, do you think? Do you think they were trying to take the heat off of each other? It's like, oh, if something happens at ours, I hope they'll talk about the other convention. I just think it's odd that they synced up that well. Or is it timing? It's probably timing in terms of...
I think it was the last weekend in May.
Yeah. It's the transition into summer. So let's get this over with before cottage season, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I think they were also coming off a week off in Ottawa, too.
Well, that could be.
It's been a fairly busy spring.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, when we had Lloyd in here back at the end of April, that was kind of like a... It wasn't a last-minute thing, but it looked like we wouldn't get him in until the summertime. And then his people emailed me, he can do the end of April. So I think a lot of these parliamentarians, even if they're not in the House of Commons every single day, are having a fairly busy schedule of different events and things. So it's committees and everything. And so I wouldn't read too much into it. It was just it was a fluke of timing.
Mm-hmm.
At least I haven't read anything to suggest that
it was by design.
Yeah.
Heck of a coincidence, though.
Oh, for sure.
And it sounds like something that happened to the Liberal Convention, too, was a bit of role reversal from the Conservatives used to get a lot of flack for their kind of cracking down on the media.
Yeah.
In terms of, we don't want, it was very restricted, I think. But it sounds like the Liberals were pulling a bit of that. In particular, it was a Star reporter, I think, got kicked out of. So there's something particularly.
Yeah, Tim Harper.
It was Tim Harper.
Oddly
yeah.
Enough,
on his,
Tim
it's his last gig, right? Mm. Tim Harper's retiring. Out of something contentious, like, could you please leave? I don't know. It's probably not the turning of the screws like we saw under Harper, but
Andrew Coyne was writing about the Conservative convention in 2013 and how it was called the Calgary Gulag.
Just in that tiny roped off area. And nobody do not leave the area.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. No one was throwing around the G word about the Liberal. But yeah, that's what's been going around, too, is that it was a fairly restrictive one, which... Again, kind of goes against what the Liberals have been saying in terms of their expressions of openness and transparency, but cynically not that surprising because they are the party in power now. They want to put on a good show, I am curious how many people were paying attention and kind of watching what was happening, at least at the Liberal one. At the Conservative one, for sure. Because there was all the hubbub around, is Stephen Harper stepping down, some of the proposals on the floor, which we'll get to. But I find it curious. It's not like the American conventions where it's wall-to-wall coverage with special guest speakers and people talking to empty chairs and that sort of thing.
Yeah, they try and fill the room, and then they turn the camera around, and there's absolutely no one. and, of course, something else that happened, which was initially it was indicated that something had happened and then it was withdrawn, but I'm not so sure was what's going on with Hunter Tutu.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. It sounds like there was an incident of some description at the convention, which has been denied by the Liberals, but it sounds like on that weekend was when it was decided by Hunter Tutu and others that he needed to seek help as well.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but you've been to conventions too, and I could see, and this is just my opinion because I've seen it, the temptation is very great at these things. It's just sometimes a free-for-all in certain areas, whether it's food or drink or you name it, right?
Well, there's the gatherings, yeah. There's the parties.
Letting the hair hang
the
down.
The after parties and the after parties.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's, I don't know, well, nobody knows what happened really.
And that's what was odd is that it was hinted at, they didn't say this happened, but
yeah.
It sounds like, I got the impression from what Trudeau had said compared to Seamus O'Regan.
Right.
Was that he seemed kind of pissed off. That was the first impressions. It was like
there was such huge support for Seamus.
Yes, it's like,
O'Regan.
Oh, Seamus, will get your act together.
Like, there was a statement from the PMO about it. Like, you know, like, and then tweets of support, and you know, there was the PMO mechanism was thrown behind Seamus.
Yeah. This was like the admonishing of the bad child. Like, okay,
right.
he's out.
Well, Trudeau.
It was his decision.
I think it was Wednesday. Trudeau before cabinet. Trudeau comes out, makes a statement, and it went live on the news channels. And like the news weren't even set up yet before his statement was done.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go watch the footage. It's on this like weird angle. It looks like a De Palma film, but that's how quickly and assuredly he wanted to like put this
quash it
in a box and shove it in the back of a storage locker. So I don't know what it was. It certainly wasn't enough to that it got any attention over the weekend. Like we've heard rumors about Hunter Tutu, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
something happened, and that's hate stuff like that because I mean, obviously, it may have happened in a closed session, not a closed session, but something that was kind of off hours, like not at the convention floor. Let's say it must have been in a
right.
But it sounds like whether there was an incident or not. Excuse me, that was in there. Just slipped out. Whether there was an incident or not, it sounds like there must have because that was the weekend where it all went down. So it's unfortunate, and of course, Everybody wishes him well and hopes that he gets it together because in that business, from John A. on, let alone, every politician on earth probably has not everyone, but you know what I mean.
Well, we're talking about type A personalities and that's
– So it's not a new thing and hopefully he will get himself together, which he probably will.
And the other thing that – was going around with people remarking how the honeymoon isn't over for the Liberals yet, despite Elbowgate and despite, the certain pieces of legislation not moving as quickly. And then today they came out and said this committee for electoral reform, we're going to have Bloc and Greens on there. And that could be seen as – I think it's the right call, but it could be seen as – a loss for the Liberals because they weren't going to do that and they seemed to be holding pretty true to not doing that. But still, the sheen isn't off. It's been almost it has been over 6 months and the sheen's not off and it seems that people still have a lot of a pretty big investment in Trudeau and the Liberals.
It's going to take more than Elbwin, some NDP and act, having, having a hissy fit, an unprecedented hissy fit in the House of Commons. It's never been seen before, that sort of storming over of the gates by a prime minister anyway. There's been other incidents, of course, but decorum definitely disappeared. So,
well, what's fascinating is the opposition's dropped the inquiry, the whole into Elbow.
Yeah, it's,
so it's
molestation. Wasn't that the Peter Van Loon's molestation? Like what, dude? Come on.
It has quietly gone away. And
I will say Harper never would have done that. That's for sure.
No, absolutely.
Not in a million years.
Well, a lot of people talked about that was like the Trudeau bouncer experience coming out. Like when you see like two people in a corner about to start some stuff, and I know a bit of this working, Saturday night at a hotel. aisle front desk, you know, when you see something about to go down, you get in there before it goes down.
Yeah, but this, there's a difference between harmless shenanigans and
there's
Donnybrook, right?
But that's the instinct, right? And one more controversy at the convention, though. Bob Ray making a gagging gesture.
Which is on our website. There,
when Trudeau thanked Stephen Harper for his service. And he had to, of course, apologize for that. And,
it was funny, though.
It was a laugh, you know. And just
it just happens to be right on camera when it happened, eh? Like, that's
one it was...
It's like the kiss cam, the gag cam.
I'm not sure Bob Ray is probably the best person to enjoy schadenfreude at someone's election loss. Yeah. So, you know, 1995, Bob.
One of the trounces of the century in Ontario, anyway.
Yeah. All right. We're dying to talk about the Conservative Convention.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about the Conservative Convention and where they pretty much renounced everything they've believed in for 13 years.
That's it. Just throw it out. Baby, bathwater, bathtub, everything.
They had the Thursday night, they had the tribute to Stephen Harper. And then the next 3 days were all about doing the opposite of what it was like the George Costanza convention. Like, the opposite must be correct.
It's like that meme, the opposite of what the Conservatives did. Yeah, that's exactly what was going on. And they were taking a bit of ribbing for what I think it was it seemed like an open stage. Like, they were trying to have a bit of fun. I think they were calling, was it con talks? What did they call that bit? You'll see it online anywhere. There was lots of photos too of Marilyn Gladue as the Grim Reaper. And, you know, they were trying to imply that things were getting really crazy at the Conservative Convention, but I think that was the idea. This was them letting their hair down. And my favorite was the rap. Arnold Viersen, Google this, Arnold Viersen's conservative rap, or just Arnold Viersen rap. He's an MP. He's in his early 30s, super conservative. He's one of those abortion kids, young people. I shouldn't say kids. He's 30-something, my goodness. But again,
your age, everyone's a kid.
Hey, kid, what was with that rapping? Is the whitest thing you'll ever see. Be on your list of white things, this guy will be number one. Just so waspy. But again, this was them trying to have fun, and you know that. And I wouldn't call them on that because it wasn't, you know, they were trying to imply that, oh, the Conservatives are still crazy. The Conservatives are becoming less and less Harper style by the day. And I think some of the more conservative, I was going to say small c, but you know, the rightier, more right wing of the Conservatives, which includes the religious based Conservatives, the fundamentalists, let's say, were feeling a bit of heat, in particular with the motion about gay marriage, which was a surprise.
Yeah,
that was a shock to me. But this I guess is the new openness. Maybe they finally realize that there's a whole ton of gay conservatives, like, I don't know, Kelly Leach, who's going to be running for the leadership. And it's like, we should probably accommodate these people.
Yeah.
And the vote was like 1,000 to, it was a little bit closer than the.
Like one third of the delegates voted to keep the definition of traditional marriage. It wasn't a landslide.
And there was that great gif of Brad, what was his name? Brad Trost, who is one on a right winger. Who was still anti-gay marriage, which is whatever, but he said something about Michelle Rempel while she was standing there, and she pulled this face. It was fantastic. It was like, because he called her a rookie MP, but she's actually been around.
She's
been around 5-6 years, something like that. So.
No, yeah, she was elected in 2011, but, you know, once you've won your second election, you're not a rookie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've still got people putting their foot right in it and shoving it in, and we expect nothing less of... I expect nothing less.
As the last election... And the social media mining of every candidate proved, everybody sticks their foot in their mouth at some point, or their phone in their mouth.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, the loss this time, and they did a lot of soul searching, I guess, and did a sounds like quite extensive analysis of what happened to us. And of course, there's lots of, yeah, what happened? And they said, one of the things that was said, that they lost a lot of votes, and particularly from women and youth.
Yeah,
and the collapse of the NDP made that vote go elsewhere, generally to the Liberals, I guess. But of course, because Liberals clobbered them. Now, mind you, their loss wasn't as bad as the Kim Campbell days when Reform surfaced.
No.
Like, that was massive. That was like 150 plus seats.
That wasn't a loss. That was a decimation.
That was a decimation. Two, party of two, right? What was after that, right? Jean Charest, and doesn't matter. It's a long time ago. But so 99 seats. I think I said this on election night. It's not so bad.
No.
But they really, if they want to be the government again, it sounds like they're doing this, is sort of step back and examine just what the heck's going on. There seemed to be something else surfaced too, was like a Keep Rona movement. It's like, keep Rona on as the leader, and of course other people are floating whether she should be the leader, and of course Kevin O'Leary showed up and went wow wow wow. I don't know how he gets so much try. I don't think he's not even party, is he?
No,
he's not card carrying.
I don't think so.
He's just well liked among the actual card carrying, who are not a movement. They are a party still.
He's like a lot of conservatives now who look at what's happening with Trump down south and thinks, I can do that.
Or flap, flap, flap.
That's
come
something
by.
I want to staple my life to.
I wonder if they paid him to come. You know, they pay people for appearances.
Oh,
right?
Sure. Maybe. I don't know.
We'll never know.
I mean, he certainly brings attention because he's a loudmouth, quote unquote, big shot. And even though I think he's more of a joke amongst Canadians than Trump is amongst Americans, it's like it's almost a false analogy to say he's the Canadian Trump in a lot of respects.
Well, that's how we roll up here, right? It's like, hey, we need an American comparison, and then yeah, we beat that to death. So.
For sure.
He's popular, and people know him in America. Shark Tank is an American show, and like,
that's
he's,
right.
You know, he probably gets more people recognize him there than here in Canada, although they keep putting him on the front of the Toronto Sun, so... Sun readers will know his face.
Speaking of the Sun, there was a tense moment. A delegate named Urs Heer was talking about how basically she was made to feel like an outsider by the Conservative campaign. And she's a Muslim, obviously. But she's from Brampton, very heavily Muslim
represent
area.
Represent Brampton, yeah.
No one wants to represent Brampton. But
she did.
Yeah, fair enough. But she said that, yeah, she was made to feel an outsider by her party's campaign. And then the Toronto Sun comes up with, like, this op-ed. Like, is she really a conservative, though? Because she's been to, like, both liberal and conservative things. And it's just like, ugh, way to kill the messengers.
It's like, ooh, you go to things. You can't be more than one thing. People go to each other's conventions all the time.
Well, even Kevin O'Leary.
Yeah. There you go. So it's like, that's just how it works.
Of course, Rona... I give Rona Ambrose credit for toning down the... I think she's been a fairly good ambassador for this new Conservative Party and for ratcheting down the Harper's... Even though she was, like, right up there. She was Harper front bench all day long.
Sure.
She did step...
Love the one you're with, right? Yeah.
She did step in it slightly when she said... you would have thought that Justin Trudeau was Canada's first female prime minister. And a lot of people, and you know, she used womanliness as an insult, and a lot of people were like, "Ooh,
yeah,
ooh."
She was freewheeling a bit there.
She
though,
was, I don't know if it was part of Night at the Improv as you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, the Grim Reaper and the rap guy.
Yeah,
see if we can find that play a bit. Oh my god,
but
so good. Sorry, so bad, it's good. Yeah,
yeah, that's what you meant.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly
The fascinating thing, Canada Land Commons, the podcast, one of the correspondents was at the convention, and so she did like a kind of a report. And one of the things she said she heard was that this was the best defeat in 25 years. Somebody said this was the – or she heard it from several people that this was the best defeat in 25 years. And she, like a lot of people, were like – didn't understand like the giddiness there.
Mm.
But I think it goes back to what we were saying. It's like people are free. It's
yes.
like the
yoke has lifted. Yeah.
Yeah, the emperor was thrown down the shaft and blew up in a ball of energy.
It's
and
like the peasants' revolt. They're
and
okay now.
Yeah, it's –
We can speak freely now.
Yeah, Mount Doom's collapsed in on itself, and now without Harper there, people are a bit more free to go. You had Patrick Brown like saying, like, we got to get on this environment thing. We got to start talking about
carbon tax. Marijuana loosening.
Marijuana decriminalization was something they endorsed, too, even though Kelly Leach has said if she becomes prime minister and marijuana's legalized, she's going to undo legalization. And I'm not...
Right.
I mean, it's...
Because she's a physician, right? So.
Well...
4 to 5 doctors
recommend.
No, she
recommend. Is a physician, but it's. I mean, I remember when Gloria was here going on about, like, the dangers of drugs making you crazy.
Look in my backyard.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's such a slender sort of division line between legalization and decriminalization, and, you know, why even bother? But, I mean, so there's still some wrinkles to iron out, but, I mean, it's... I think it's fairly positive developments.
But and what's positive about it is that we're actually seeing the diversity of opinion.
Yes.
Right? So whether you agree with those opinions or not, they're out there. And if everybody's for, like, democratic expression, regardless of whether you agree with those opinions or not, and believe me, I'm not remotely near agreeing with conservatives in general, by all means. I mean, that's what's very interesting about this to see is that this is all coming out there as opposed to just having this one sort of monochromatic blinders on view, which was the way under Harper. It was his way and his little group or whatever or the highway, right? There was no shades of anything. And now we're seeing, okay, we've got – let's decriminalize marijuana and just ticket people for small quantities, and then you have the marijuana hotline or whatever. I was like, oh, my God. Think of the children.
Even people like Jason Kenney was like, yeah, let's get rid of the traditional definition of marriage. And if you're thinking about party leaders who could be like the actual party leader, he's like one of the most conservative of the conservative.
Yeah. And we were all trained in public school to learn that conservatism is wrong, right? That's what that came out today. This is the latest comments. It's like, it starts at school.
I know I was. I got an A on that unit.
I think I learned all my anti-conservative things in the library, not the... but anyway, another story. But yeah, Jason Kenney also says, yeah, so close the libraries if you want conservatism to rule. He also said that he thought the party was never more united, which is interesting because I see him as one of the uber-conservative forces, right? He has he's more of the Harperite bent reform side of the equation. So it was a big love-in for these guys.
Except when somebody had the bright idea to start the hashtag thank you Stephen Harper.
Oh, wasn't that great? Oh.
Well, it was great for
what
us.
What were you thinking?
It wasn't so great if people wanted genuine expressions of gratitude for Stephen Harper. That wasn't such a great idea. But for those of us who like Twitter comedy, it was excellent. But we'll leave it there. Hashtag thank you Stephen Harper.
Thank you. We had many, many years of quality broadcasting thanks to you. So, Rob Ford.
And thank you, Rob Ford. Hashtag thank you, Rob Ford. Hashtag rip Rob Ford. Rest in peace. Anyway, before we get into trouble, let's take a commercial break and play some music. And then we'll come back with serious issues because we're trying not to get into trouble. But you're listening to Open Sources on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Hi, I'm Handel, and I volunteer at CFRU because I love working with the people here, and I also love the feeling of contributing something meaningful to the world.
CFRU is always looking for new volunteers. No experience is necessary, and all the training is free. If you would like to get involved, email volunteer@cfru.ca.
Hi, my name is Jeff, and I love CFRU because it introduces me to all kinds of music I would otherwise not have heard. And there's a vending machine down the hall.
Railway blockades, prominent and public calls for justice and demands for further investigation. Efforts to force a public inquiry have stalled. Either way, an inquiry might not answer why as many as 1,000...
There's a crisis of missing and murdered indigenous women in this country that has become a national tragedy.
A national disgrace with no solution in sight.
Yeah, when something comes into the station with a Steve Paikin voiceover in it, we have to play it.
MC Paikin.
I heard a bit of Mansbridge in there, too. That is new into the station. It is called Listen to Our Heartbeat, a compilation of Aboriginal electronic music from our Indigenous section and selection. It's a compilation, artists raising awareness of violence against Aboriginal women. That was probably very clear from track one. And that was sent to us from the Warriors Against Violence Society in Vancouver, BC. So if you want more information of them, www.wav-bc.com. There you go.
And we're going to talk about First Nations stuff in a little bit, but first we have to talk about assisted dying, doctor-assisted dying. There is currently a bill, C-14, it passed third reading in the House, I believe, yesterday, and then it's now on its way to the Senate. However, Senate has sent signals that they are probably going to drag their heels on it. Meanwhile, there is a lot of, actually, criticism of the law that it's... I read one article where somebody said that Kay Carter, who was the person who brought the case to the Supreme Court that opened the door to doctor-assisted dying, that under the Liberals' law, she would still not be able to have the right to die, which seems to be self-defeating since she's kind of the root of all this coming about. This is, again, a difficult issue to talk about, but it seems like we're trying to rush something through that hasn't been thought all the way through, and it doesn't matter anyway because it's, again, the deadline is Monday. We're not going to have a law by 11:59 p.m. on Sunday ready to go to guide the country's doctors into what they're going to do.
Yeah, we might have a deeply flawed law by the sounds of it. So there's a few things that have happened and are going to happen. Jody Wilson-Raybould said that she thought that Carter would be able to die under this legislation. There's some contentious language in there. One of the things is reasonably foreseeable death, which was a huge catch-all. Simply because there's been a couple of decisions, one in Alberta and one in the Ontario Court of Appeal this past week, which kind of echoed the Alberta decision, was saying that what the Supreme Court they've had to interpret this because of the fact that there is no law right now. It's just sort of this gray area, right? It's what the Supreme Court said. And their interpretation of it, the two courts, is that the right to assisted death is your loss of quality of life. So you can have... came up with the example of somebody who is, say, you're a quadriplegic and you've decided that this is the absolute worst thing that could happen to you and your quality of life is zero. Now, there are lots of people very productive as quadriplegics, but the whole idea of this is that it's your decision. Right. So your quality of life is you've lost all functionality of your body. You can live a very long time as a quadriplegic, right? But if you don't want to...
Well, think of Christopher Reeves.
Exactly. But if you decide that that's just not for you... Should you be able to decide? And this is the gray area. Now, it sounds like what's probably going to happen is this is going to go to the Senate, and the Senate is going to put an amendment in it to that it will be revisited.
Yes.
So it sounds like we're going to get this legislation that's a bit contentious and people are having problems with, but the Senate is essentially giving them a bit of a pardon to say, okay, you guys are going to get another extension and more time to sort this out. The Liberals seem very confident that this is the way that it should go. And I think they're trying to appease certain groups with this reasonably foreseeable and that. I think that's their way of trying to please. I personally think it's the religious community.
Yeah, it's people who are afraid that...
They're going to start killing everyone.
Yeah,
they're killing, like the ads on the buses in Guelph. They're going to kill everybody. They're going to start killing everyone.
Exactly. No, that's it. Yeah. That, you know, mom's becoming kind of an inconvenience, so I'm going to take her to the, you know, snip doctor.
The Soylent Green factory.
Yeah, take her to the glue factory. I think that's the fear also of, like, having suicide tourism come to Canada as well. I think that's also one of their
fears. Canadians go to other countries too.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how much of that is warranted, but yeah, that's the fine line they're walking, and I think they're walking it a little too finely for my taste in terms of this. I think in a perfect world, because what's going to happen on Monday is nothing. It's like it's going to end up like abortion. There's no regulation for abortion.
No, they just have to go by the Supreme Court decision.
Right.
So it means everything's going to end up in court as opposed to just happening, right?
Yeah, so that's what's going to happen on Monday. It's just it's going to be up on a doctor-by-doctor basis. And it's just going to be, you know, until there is a framework, if there is a framework. And, you know, I'm kind of okay with that. This again, I think we're looking at a like abortion, a medical procedure. You and your doctor, those are the people who should be making these kinds of decisions. We don't have a board that overviews like whether or not you should get heart surgery. Like, there's no government law that says at what point you should have liposuction or cheek implants or, heck, even, you know, quadruple bypass surgery or anything like that. Those are decisions made between doctors and patients. And I think that's what this ideally in my world, it's like you are a patient. Your doctor takes your tests, examines you, tells you what your prognosis is, and from there you make decisions. And one of the big things is that I don't think the law addresses is what happens for somebody with, like, let's say ALS, which is degenerative, where you can go for months, maybe years, where yep. you're functional, or at least maybe 75% functional.
Like,
and then
Sue Rodriguez, the right. case that blew this wide open 25 years ago.
Exactly. You can't name, like, a point where you can say, okay, this is the – once I get to point A, then I want to have this take effect. There's no provision that says – that you, like, you can't lay out a living will that says – when this is gone, this is gone, this is gone, at that point I want to die.
Yeah, and one of the examples of that is for dementia. There's going right. to be no advance directive. So,
yeah.
And this is something that I would want, because I personally wouldn't want to live with that. A prime example of somebody who also didn't want to live with that was Pierre Trudeau Sr.
Right.
He was diagnosed with prostate cancer, cancer of the everything, and dementia at the same time. And rather than get any treatment, he was 80 years old. He said, well, I don't want to live with dementia, so I'm just going to let the cancer take me. So in essence, it's not assisted suicide, but it's just, you know.
It was nature-assisted
suicide. Nature-assisted suicide of sorts, right? So, there's a prime example. If the other condition didn't exist, what do? You don't want to live with dementia. Somebody like Pierre Trudeau, who's, you know.
Who was sharp all his life.
Very, very sharp all of his life. Super yeah. intelligent man. Didn't want to live with that. So, you know, why there's no advance directive for dementia, I don't know. They're damn well should be, and you would hope eventually that there would be. And if you don't want that option, then don't choose it, right? I think this is the problem with this, is that they're trying to structure it to please so many different groups. Yeah. Whereas the Supreme Court has said, okay, here it is. There's no requirement for a condition to be terminal or life-threatening.
Yeah.
Just if you want to go, you can go. But then they've added all these exceptions, right? So it does need more time for sure. And it sounds like they're going to get it, but they got to get everything into gear very, very quickly, because they've already had one extension. This is the end of one extension already, right?
Well, it's extension. They wanted 6 months, and yeah. the Supreme Court said you had four.
Yeah. But if they get 180 days, it's pretty much going to work.
Another 6 months, and I think this is the Senate throwing them a lifeline, because they've yeah. the Liberals have shot down every proposed amendment so far. But this is the Senate. When we were talking about Duffy went back to the Senate talking about, like, the point of the Senate having a Senate. Here's
yeah, the pro Senate people yeah. can point to this and say, look, here's a prime
example.
Here's how
the Senate works. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or it's like, okay, sober second thought. Why don't we approve this, and you can take 6 more months to massage it and perfect it, because, you know, obviously we think there should be a framework in place. And the Liberals have seemed to indicate they are willing to consider that. I mean, this is a fairly relative new development. I think this has happened today. The Senate has come out and said this is what we want to do in terms of amending it. So, yeah, they'd be fairly shrewd, I think, to take it. I don't see that as a defeat in any way. The whole thing.
Like, at least they're trying, because I know a lot of times the conservatives, they would just sort of ignore it, right? It's whatever.
Although I think there was some discussion today that it seemed like there was a lot of work done behind the scenes the conservatives did. Because it doesn't fit into the agenda, or it didn't fit into the agenda, their agenda at least. It wasn't not a lot was done publicly, but a lot of the legal homework on it apparently had been done by the last government.
Yeah, but that was something going back to the convention. What was that something that they passed about the believing in the value and dignity of all human life? Kind of leans towards the sort of not everybody's going to be able to get this option. I guess that sort of speaks to abortion as well. But that's another topic. But yeah, so they've all got a lot of work to do yet, even though it's June 6th is supposed to be the deadline, but it won't be. No. I think a lot of people are hoping they get the extension and sort it out, because it's huge. It's not to be trifled with. Like, they have to get this right or live with no law, like abortion, which has had no law for years now, right? When was that struck down?
the 80s. I think.
Like, it's just sort of there.
Yeah, Morgan Toller was in the 80s, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Although there, that's problematic, too, because if you're thinking about abortion services, if you're someone who lives in Guelph wondering where you can go to get an abortion outside of, like, an emergency basis,
mm-hmm.
that's a very tough thing to do. And, of course, PEI is
yeah.
still...
And so, the hospital doesn't do them, even though there's pickets out front all the time.
Yeah. And so it's...
Wrong place, people. Anyway.
Yeah, it's there's problems with that as well, even
yeah.
though I think that's the way I would prefer it. But there's still problems.
And there'll always be problems with things that are so contentious, especially, well, I mean, it is life and death issues in this case for sure.
Well, at least for another couple of generations till religion goes away anyway.
There you go.
I called
in
it.
In your opinion.
I called
Please
it.
Don't call, tweet, or write. The views expressed by the...
yeah,
are those of the commentators does and not of the station.
Does that really need to be said?
Probably.
All right.
We need to come up with that a little bit, actually. So.
Who would have guessed that the doctor-assisted dying segment would have ended with big laughs, but okay. Here's another very serious topic. On Monday, Kathleen Wynne, Premier of Ontario, offered apologies to the First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people for what she called a generation of abuse, or generations of abuse, I should say. She said, Indigenous people became the target of colonial policies designed to exploit, assimilate, and eradicate them. And then she promised to spend $250 million over 3 years for a reconciliation, for education on residential schools. She also pledged to initiate a Treaties Recognition Week in the first week of November. And we have a new name change. The Ministry of Aboriginal Affairs will now be called the Ministry of Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation. Not to say that those aren't all positive steps, but in the Ontario's north, we have Attawapiskat, suicide epidemic, Gisheshewan, concerns about access to reasonably priced food and good living conditions, water, Grassy Narrows,
yes.
water poisoned, and there was a big...
mercury.
Big protest in Toronto today.
Mm-hmm.
Mercury, yes. Been going on for almost 50 years. So I think while... I mean, this was the government's official response to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report, but I think, and I can't speak for First Nations people, obviously, but if I were First Nations, I think I would rather than hearing another apology. I think we all understand that at an institutional level, white people are sorry for this, but I think if I was living in Grassy Narrows, I don't give a damn about changing the name of Aboriginal Affairs. What I do give a damn is I can't drink my water.
Yes, very, very true. And the I think this has been part of the problem over the years in terms of who has jurisdiction, because, you know, they'll look to the province and the province will say, well, that's actually a federal issue. And then it just gets bounced around until we end up, you know, 20 years with no water supply or 50 years with mercury in your river. And because it's out of the way, nobody cares, although people do care. Now, I mean, there is something to this in terms of quite a few of the residential school survivors were invited to the proceedings. Chief Isadora Day was there as well. Métis leaders, victims of residential schools, and elders were there. And so it's not a completely empty apology to say we're sorry and then nothing's going to happen.
Right.
I think a lot of the money is going to go towards education of the colonial aspects. The In schools, this is going to become it's going to be talked about, whereas before it never came up. I honestly, thinking back to my school days, public, and now it's a while ago now, but it just never came up. It was all noble savage kind of stuff, honest to God, which is hard to believe because I'm not that old.
Like leading
Cartier, I am old man hurts, but I'm not that old. But it was all, you know, the usual crap,
leading Cartier through the woods to find the
exactly
Great Lakes,
and Skajekwita, Sacagawea, whatever, that's the American. But anyway, it was all stuff like that. Oh, and if you're ever in Cubs, good Lord. Cubs got to go too. That's topic for another day. Anyway,
and
so...
And you think I'm going to get letters?
Yes, dear Cubs. drawing attention to it and education is good, but there is more that's necessary. And I think there are quite a few in the community that are saying, well, this is all well and good, but what is going to happen with the... things such as contaminated water supplies and you name it, living in squalid conditions, will it be all talk? And also not really mentioned in this, which is something that bothers me, is that we're speaking specifically about residential schools here, is that how the churches, it seems, have been let off the hook due to a bit of a loophole. And this was something that also came up last week, neck and neck with this story, or the previous week, in that the it was deemed that the Catholic Church had the most residential schools in Ontario and in Canada. And they were supposed to make their best efforts to raise a certain amount of money to help out in terms of righting the wrongs. But best efforts is a legal sort of – there's an out there. It's not like you must raise $25 million, which I think was the number.
Right.
It was you need to make your best effort. And the best effort turned out to be like $2, $3, $4 million, right? That's all. And the – other churches' responses to that is they're playing a proportion of that. So if it's like, say it was 70 or 80% for the Catholic Church and 10 for Anglican, whatever, all they have to do is pay the percentage on what the Catholic Church has raised. Now, we're talking about a multi – yeah, we're definitely going to get mail. Multi-billion dollar industry. I don't want to say industry, but the Vatican has a lot of money.
Yes.
And yet there's no recourse there. The abuse came from them. The schools were run by them. The government was in on it too, and yet somehow that's all just kind of cast aside. They very quietly hide in the shadows and don't have to do anything. And I hope that is something that ends up in the educational plan in the schools, in particular the Catholic schools, which will never happen. But that has to be addressed as well. You know, it's not just the government that came up with this system. It was perpetuated by the churches for the most part, right? They ran it for the government. And yet somehow they're silent on that. So that really bugs me.
Yeah, the Catholic Church has been around for 2,000 years, so they got to be showing a profit by now.
Well, yeah. I mean, $25 million is a drop in the bucket. I'm sure the Pope's wardrobe is probably worth more than that.
Joking aside, though, yeah.
No, I'm deadly serious, actually.
I meant my crack about the prophet, but yeah. It has been forgotten, and it seems to be up to government to make the full reconciliation, even though the Truth and Reconciliation Report, which actually turns a year old, I don't think it's this week in particular, but I mean, it was around this time last year it came out.
It wasn't on the 21st, Aboriginal Day.
I think so.
Oh, yeah, so close.
So it's, we're coming up. And there's, that seems to be the lost thread in all this is what the church did. And of course, there is a proviso in the Truth and Reconciliation Report to have the Pope deliver an official apology. And I mean, I realize there's a lot on the government plate, but I do wonder how far along any talk to the Vatican there has been done in terms of getting an official apology. Of course, the Anglican Church as well owns a share of that. But, you know, we're talking about fairly wealthy organizations.
Who will plead poor when somebody's coming knocking, right?
Sure.
But I thought the Anglicans and the United Church have apologized.
I believe
the Catholic
right.
Church will say they've apologized, but it was sort of a roundabout way to avoid liability. I think that's what it's all about. Because, and this is
for sure,
with the admission of the government on this comes cash, right? That's
true. Yeah.
And that's what everybody's terrified of. It's like, oh, if I admit to this, they're going to make me pay, right?
It's like being
a deadbeat dad, right? Seriously, they're not. You know,
they're not coughing it
up. It's like to establish these programs to rectify the problems in these communities, brought on specifically by a lot of it by attendance in residential schools. To rectify it is going to take time, resources, but also cash. So,
well, they are all called father.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
But, yeah, more specifically, though, I think, the cash, I think, is what I'd like to see. Action is what I'd like to see. It's wonderful that we at least acknowledge things and say, like, in the future, we are going to look at this ugliness in our past, in its ugly face, and deal with it. But it's so hard to deal with it on... In terms of the fact that there are problems that need to be rectified, and that was my first thought, perhaps not my first thought, but it was a thought that came fairly swiftly after I watched Kathleen Wynne's address Monday, was that haven't heard much about Attawapiskat lately. Did everybody there stop trying to commit suicide? Yep. I hardly doubt it. But I mean, it has to do with news cycles too. You know, there's a sudden burst of coverage, and then you know, there's a fire over here, and everybody goes away. And I understand that, and I understand these ongoing issues. It's tough to cover ongoing issues. Because, you know, you do want some sort of resolution, and these things aren't easy to get resolution on. But that was my first thought. It's like, Attawapiskat hasn't been in the news in a while. Keshechewan hasn't been in the news in a while. And then the Grassy Narrow started coming up more because they had this huge protest planned for today. But still, there are systemic problems that need to be addressed. And apologies, although well-meaning and well-deserved, just aren't good enough. At least I think. I mean, it would be nice if the apology was accompanied by, hey, guess what, Grassy Narrows? You can drink your water again. Nobody's going to get what's the disease? I wrote it down. The
mercury poisoning.
Well, there's a specific Minamata disease, which comes from Japan, because that
same kind of thing happened there
in the 50s and 60s. That was the first case of like widespread mercury poisoning. Water seems to be such a
human right.
It's a human right, but I'm saying in terms of problems on reservations, that seems to be the recurrent one. You can't drink it in Grassy Narrows because it's in mercury. You can't drink it in... I can't remember its name.
Yes.
But, you know, the reserve that's isolated on an island, and they have to drink bottled water all winter long because they can't get tap water. It's
A lot of it's to do with, in the case of Grassy Narrows, and that is adjacent industries, extractive industries, ruining the water supply and ruining the land, traditional hunting grounds wiped out, you name it. So, and therein lies the problem with the settler culture, colonial culture, right? It's like, you know, we want these resources. You guys can see over here and we'll give you $4 a year. Shut up. And then we're going to beat the Indian out of you, as was the plan, right? So
yeah, and
it's not going to happen overnight, obviously, but there's lots of room for recourse right immediately. These things should be fixed immediately. They should be fixed yesterday. How many times we've had this discussion? So many times. My God, if I was able, I would just get up there and get going on it, but I don't know. We're hoping that all, you know, apologies and all that will lead to a result. A positive result for our Indigenous people, because it's been far too long. Far too long.
Yes, I agree. And that's it for this week's edition of Open Sources Guelph. You can stay in touch with us all week long at opensourcesguelph.com. Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, you can find us there. At @OS_Guelph is where you can find us on Twitter. And then we have all the episodes of the Guelph of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, and you can download those and listen to them on whatever you listen to find podcasts on. You can stay connected with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donson, or go to my political blog, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I did put something on the Spanner book. I don't know if you saw it. You might have. You might not have, but check it out. I do my thing there.
If you haven't seen it, check it out. There you go.
Thank you.
DJ Sounds Good to Me is up next here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will, of course, see you again next Thursday for an all-new Open Sources Guelph. And until then, see you next time. We'll be right back.